Welcome to the Happy Being Well podcast, where we talk about strategies and insights so you can live happy being well with your host, Rita Ferrugia. This podcast is presented by happybeingwell.com, your online store providing the best in all-natural wellness products, such as natural essential oils, all-natural bath products, all-natural facial masks, all-natural deodorants, irresistible leggings, crystals, including crystal home decor and kitchen items, herbal teas, natural sleep aids, and so much more natural wellness goodies at happybeingwell.com. Free shipping on any order within the USA at happybeingwell.com. Now enjoy the show.
Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Happy Being Well. And we have a really exciting guest today. And I know I always say this, but we actually really do, considering this podcast is about personal development. And what better to have Chris Howard on, who is like one of the OGs of personal development, more specifically, one of the OGs of NLP. If you don't know what that is, he'll explain what NLP is. I think I briefly discussed NLP throughout episodes of this podcast. He's going to take a deep dive with you and hypnosis and why that's important and why that's a really good foundation to whatever success you want to build in your life. Chris Howard has achieved extraordinary business success as a social entrepreneur, transformational speaker, author, lifestyle and wealth strategist in a career spanning over two decades. And he's received glowing reviews from Dr. Forbes Riley. A lot of people know Forbes Riley. She's the, you know, infomercial queen and really popular sales trainer. And also from John Steller, who after working with Chris, went on to be the publicist for the book, the movie, The Secret. So Chris, welcome to the Happy Being Well podcast.
Hey, yeah. When you said, you said the OG and NLP, and then I'm like, NLP, and then I said, and then you said, if you don't know what that is, and you said, I'm like, I don't. What is OG? you were defining NLP. You were saying, if you don't know what NLP is.
Funny that you said that, because as a millennial, I didn't really know what OG was. Because everyone's throwing around OG, and I'm like, and I just
it's
recently,
the goat, right?
No, it's not. It's original. Is it original? Original. Yeah, it's original. Yeah.
I had no idea, but I'm happy to be original. That's which is kind of interesting because who's really original? You know, like we model. You know, when we're born into the family, wherever we're born with our parents, we soak in their values, their beliefs, their ways of looking at the world. And then we go out and we start to model people inside and outside the family. And we have social values that come in. So it's like, who really is original? I guess we all are, you know, it's been said that each of us has a model of the world that's as unique as our thumbprint. And it's the, you know, sum total of all of those influences that become who we are. How fascinating is that, right? There was a quote I'll share with you real quick it was David Bohm, who was a quantum theorist. And, you know, he considered that the entire universe is just a bunch of atoms, molecules, you know, vibrating. And what gives the illusion of matter is the density and the arrangement of the subatomic particles and the atoms and the molecules and the rate of vibration, right? It gives the illusion of matter. But he said, very famously, David Bohm, he said, we take in what we take in from all that there is. And that becomes who we are. And it's true. We take in what we take in. We develop this sense of a personality. But who you are determines everything you do and everything that you have and everything that you create in your life. Right. And so if we want to make changes, of course, we change within. But just kind of a funny way to start here is where.
Well, I just say original because one of the originals, OG. You started over two decades ago, and back then it was sort of fairly new. NLP. I mean, it wasn't really very popularized until I would say, I don't know, the 90s, really?
Let's see. I mean,
invented in the 70s, but it was a very niche group of people that were, you know, learning about it.
If NLP and its roots, and it's part of what I do, it's not all of what I do, but it's definitely part of what I definitely come from that background, right? But in the beginning, it was taught primarily, it was created in the late 60s, early 70s in the University of Santa Cruz. There was a student group there led by a couple of guys, by a computer scientist and a linguist, that went in and they were attempting to discover how therapists made transformation or assisted a client to make transformation when they did, so they could replicate the moment of transformation without having to go through years of therapy. And they created this hybrid blend of sciences. It's like a blend of cognitive and behavioral psych, but it's like pop psychology, right? So it's just tools for transformation. And but it was very, very profound. In fact, you know, in the beginning, it was primarily the people that were interested in it were educators and consultants and coaches and therapists. Over the years, I've had thousands of psychologists, psychiatrists, medical doctors, and things like that come through the classes. That's who it appealed to most. But at some point, you know, Tony Robbins popularized it and that was in the 80s. So he was out there and he started by teaching it, and then he moved away from teaching it, but it was the foundation of what he was doing. I think it has gotten more widespread appeal, especially like when I would teach in Australia. We had a huge, huge following in Australia for years. I mean, 2,000, 3,000 people at every event that we were doing, and London as well. You know, I had 6,000 people the first time we went to London. So there was just this a huge desire for it. Wasn't as well known in the U.S., but it's still. And when I say as well known, it's kind of covertly hidden in all sorts of things. You see it all over the place, you know, or at least the teachings from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really see a lot of, you know, either they be healing modalities or other mind technologies developed. But I can see the roots of it is they've learned NLP first, and then they've kind of remastered their own, you know, mind technology. But it's someone who, you know, I've studied NLP many, 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 many years ago. So I can identify when someone's teaching, you know, the principles, the concepts. From. Yeah. And they've just like tweaked certain techniques, that's exactly, or processes.
I mean, that's what a lot of people do, you know. But then you look at NLP. NLP wasn't original either. You know, everything that's in it came from, you know, Virginia Satir, the family therapist, Fritz Perls and Gestalt therapy, Milton Erickson and hypnosis. So none of it was unique to NLP as well. It's just, you know, we go through season after season and year after year, and sometimes we forget the people that contributed beforehand. Even when you look at, you know, books like classic books like Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, I mean, that was derived from a lot of stuff that was being talked about in New Thought and that sort of thing, but applying a lot of those concepts specifically to money. You know, it was applying the concepts of auto-suggestion. Well, auto-suggestion where you focus on the amount of money you want to attract and you bathe in the feeling of the wish fulfilled, that's called auto-suggestion, where we're giving the suggestion to ourselves. Well, that whole idea of auto-suggestion was way before Napoleon Hill with Emil Coué that gave us that. He's the guy who gave us Coué-isms. Every day and every way I get a little better, he used to say. And he'd say, if you gave yourself auto-suggestion like that, you could begin to improve. So, you know, we're constantly building on the tall shoulders of the giants that preceded us. And you know, nothing's really new under the sun, but it comes out and it expresses itself in new ways. I think there's interesting things that, you know, The Secret, who would have thought that they could shepherd the message to that many people in this new medium? I mean, everybody would have thought it eventually, but when it first came out, that was groundbreaking. And I think it was good for personal development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally, totally agree. Well, I think when you're saying NLP, a part of NLP, I think it was like somebody kind of observed Virginia Satir. I don't really think she knew what she was doing in terms of.
She did know, actually. She did. She did know the language patterns, and they were aware of it. So it's not like the NLP people were making her aware of what she was doing. The NLP people was looking at what she was doing and throwing it into a book with what other people were doing. Which is kind of interesting.
I was misinformed then. I was taught that she didn't know what she was doing.
Yeah.
She was
no, they weren't. They weren't making her patterns conscious. I mean, not to say that they didn't do that sometimes. I mean, originally, Richard Bandler, who was one of the co-founders, was an editor for some of Fritz Perls' books. Fritz Perls was the father of Gestalt therapy. Well, Fritz Perls was talking about a process that he did with somebody and another process and another process. And Bandler thought, boy, if he did it, if I just follow what he's doing, I should be able to get the same result. And he found that, yes, he could do rapid therapy like that. But if you look at it, there's nothing really that exists in NLP that wasn't pre-existing someplace else. So what they did was they brought together tools. Like even there's a concept in NLP that are called meta programs. Okay, what's a meta program? It's your personality profile. But it had to, you know, every science needs its jargon, right? And so what NLP really was at the time in the early 70s, computers were all the rage. And they said, and when we think of an analogy helps us to consider what's that which is unknown by considering the known. Well, people were understanding stuff about computers now all of a sudden. So Bandler and Grinder then said, why don't we take the metaphor of a computer and map it across to a human being? And let's change the title. Let's not call that a personality profile. Like what's the Myers-Briggs profile system today was based on the work of Carl Jung. They said, let's not call that personality profile. Let's call it a meta program instead, which means an overarching program that might cause us to make the choices that we do. So personality profiles existed long before that, but they called it a different name and they pulled it together. Shouldn't diminish at all the power of bringing that collection of tools together, because that's really what's powerful. You know, I mean, if somebody's going to design, I'm a martial artist. So if somebody designs a new art, they're going to bring a bunch of tools together from previously existing places and it becomes new.
Cool. So you're describing basically the components of our personality and, you know, how we can identify the components of our personality. You know, so how do you create change, and why is change so difficult in people? Like, because people are always trying to change, and it's just one of those difficult.
Well, I think we could look at it two ways, right? We could say it's difficult to create change, or we could take the polar opposite and say, well, it's easy to create change. You know, why is change so easy to make? Because when we do make change, it's oftentimes easy to embrace the benefits of making that change. And it's easy to, you know, experience life in a new way. But when we're trying to make change and we'd like to make change and we're in that slog of wanting it, but not quite there, that's where it's difficult. That's where we feel the pain. But I would submit to you that the difference between the person who's thrilled about making the change, you know, like let's say the person is wanting to weigh less. They want to donate to the universe 30 pounds or 10 kilos, whatever it is, right? So they want to donate that weight to the universe. It's a pretty easy life to step into when you're stepping into that dress that you wanted to wear, you know, that you couldn't wear for so long, or where you're going out and you're breathing more freely and you feel energetic. You got a spring in your step. That's easy, right? That's where the person has made the change. But so the question really becomes, what's the difference between this person who's slogging it through and can't seem to do it and the person who's living this new life because they've made it? And I would submit to you, it's the alignment of the conscious and the unconscious mind, right? Because if consciously we want to make a change, we say that's what we'd like to do. Neurobiologists say it's only 5% of who we are that one would consider conscious. So 5% of you is going, I want it. The other 95% may be going everywhere else. Maybe saying like, I might be thinking, boy, if I get in great shape, it's just going to be too much work. It's going to be, I can't really do it anyway. These are, you know, beliefs that may be embedded at the unconscious level. Nobody in my family's ever done it. In fact, it's in my genes to get heavier. So maybe I just need to leave it that way and just stop trying to, maybe I just need to be happy with this. Maybe, and they'll come up with reasons. They'll come up with excuses. Well, thin people are superficial anyway. Thin people never have fun because they're counting calories all the time. And I don't want to be that kind of a person. This person will come up with reasons, excuses, blame, justification at the unconscious level. So now you got 5% that wants it, the other 95% going everywhere. But that's true in money. That's true in relationships. That's true everywhere. So ultimately, the reason why it's so hard is because people are trying to make change with just their conscious mind, when in reality, it's your unconscious where all true change happens. And when it happens at an instant. And that's not where we're trying to make change. That's where it's like who we are has changed. Because I bet you've had behaviors, I know I have, that you look in your past and you go, there's no way I'd do that. I did that before, but I wouldn't do that today because I'm a different person. And that means we're not trying to make the change. We don't want to make the change. We have changed. And that's an easy place to be when you look back at it, right? It's like, boy, I'm proud of who I am. I'm proud that I made that shift. So the only question is, how do you accelerate that? And that's what we do inside the classes and stuff.
Awesome. I love that. And what about people who they just feel stuck? Why? I guess you could say there's probably a comfort zone, but I'm sure there's other reasons.
There's all sorts of other reasons. There's all sorts of reasons why someone might be stuck. They could be stuck due to a lack of vision, a lack of vision of possibility. They could be stuck due to a lack of self-belief. They could be stuck because of past traumas that may have impacted them and impacted their nervous system in some way. And now they've started playing small because it's like every trauma, sometimes we'll have a bag. It's like this bag of rocks on our back, and it gets heavier and heavier as we go through life. And sometimes we stop going for what we really want because we feel it's going to equal pain or throw more rocks in our bag, or we end up playing a small life. So many, many different reasons why. If I'm doing private work with an individual and coaching them, and I do more work with big groups. So if I'm working with a big group, though, it is the same as working with an individual at some level. There's going to be generalities with the group, whereas with the individual, you can get real specific about looking at, you know, what's holding this person stuck. I've had, and from a career perspective, I've had a number of people come to me over the years. And a lot of times, you know, if they're climbing up a ladder that's leaning against the wrong wall, it would make sense that person has no motivation to do it because they're on the wrong path. So one of the things I'll look at first is life purpose issues. And is this person on their true north? And then if that's so, then it's like, okay, well, what else is preventing that person from stepping up? My belief is that no matter what it is that we want to create, it's never a question of external resources around us. It's always a question of internal resources. You have this warehouse of resources inside, but the problem is that most people are looking with a little teeny pin light, you know? So my belief is it's time to throw on the floodlights so that you have access to all the resources that you could ever need. You have confidence within you. You've been confident before in many situations. You have the ability to be warm and connected with people. You have the ability to be persuasive with people. You have the ability to be decisive and to have perseverance. All of these things are inside of you. They're inside of me. They're inside of everybody. That's why we say there's no such thing as unresourceful people. There's only unresourceful states. And if we can tap into states that are more powerful for us, we'll become magnetic for people, resources, and opportunities. We'll be driven to create those things that we really are meant to create, those things that are in our heart. And we'll live a more powerful and more deeply fulfilling life, you know? So all of those things are possible for us. But people have different kinds of issues, you know? It depends on the individual.
I love that. And for you, like, you know, I think more than ever, even with myself, you know, being a personal development junkie, like you said, we pick up things from the environment. And given what we all went through, you know, with the pandemic and fear all around us, even myself, I noticed I absorbed fear and it was showing up in my decisions and, you know, just... and I noticed it and I just blew it out. But what do you say to everybody else who is on their path of expanding their consciousness and what they can do, you know, in a climate where the environment is, the fear is amplifying just due to the external environment of the current conditions of the world?
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning of time, we've had conditions that were unfavorable to people, you know, whether it be an extinction event that like what happened in the time of the dinosaurs, or whether it be harsh weather or tragedy that hits us from one side or another, or war, the atrocities of war. You know, human beings have had to deal with all sorts of things. And, you know, when you look at the anxiety we might feel about the fact that we had to close our doors and be inside for a year. I mean, I would say that that pales in comparison to the anxiety that somebody has when their village is being bombed, or when, you know, when they're having, or they just lost family members because of things going on. So it's like all of that stuff is part of the human condition. And for me, I don't know that right now I kind of don't subscribe to the notion that it's worse now than any other time. It may be heightened now. We have television. We have things. We are able to instantly hear about things that might happen in wartime and in situations like that. And it's, you know, it's much harder for people to hide things, the atrocities that happen with people. But for me, I look at everything and I go, okay, what's my role in a world that may, you know, not always be perfect. You might say underneath it all spiritually that there's some underlying perfection among, you know, amongst the chaos. But, you know, I think we all have the opportunity to use whatever God-given gifts we have to enlighten and uplift humanity in some way. And if we can do that, then we're living a pretty powerful life. And if you can do that in business, you know, then you've really found a magic formula for making a profit, because that will be a reflection of the value that you create in the eyes of the marketplace. So if you can really come up with solutions that change people's lives for the better, you can really succeed on that level. And then when we think of in our personal lives, there's nothing from my perspective, there's nothing I'd rather be doing personally than be on my true north, on the path where that I'm meant to be on. So that becomes incredibly emotionally fulfilling. And then it becomes about a balance of, you know, learning how to balance that work-life thing, which a lot of people, you know, it escapes them sometimes, but that's where life becomes richest. Because certainly if life was about money, I think money would be a very poor motivator, and the world wouldn't be as nice a place.
I agree. And that's why it's so important to discover our why. And, you know, and going to a training like yours, it really, really unpacks, you know, who you are, what your values are, what your beliefs are, so you can discover what your why is, so you can really tap into the fuel to get you going. I think a lot of people, you know, I think that is probably, in my observation, it's really tapping into that, and like really tapping into that real energy, that fuel, to, because it takes a lot of energy to whatever it is you want to create in your life, whether that's a successful relationship, you know, healthier relationships, because that requires nurturing, that requires time. And that requires, you know, how you're showing up. You have enough energy to show up, or even in especially a business, building a business, or even just a career. If you are an executive, you know, it does require a certain high level of energy. And if you don't have that, if you're not that true passion, right, it's not really aligned with your values and beliefs, you're not going to fully show up and play out, right? So I think that's where people...
agreeing.
Yeah, I think that's where people like have challenges, is tapping into that real drive of fuel to like really accelerate them to actually be able to go through the obstacles and the challenges.
And I think that goes back to the right path, making sure that you're on that path. But there are, you know, there's certainly more to it. And, you know, I know you had mentioned our seminar. We'd like, if anybody at any time wants, like, I've got three gifts that I always give people, and there's good gifts with program tickets and stuff like that. And it's always at chrishowardgift.com. So anybody that goes to chrishowardgift.com can go on there and grab, you know, there's one for breaking through and starting your life. There's another one that's about the transformational hypnosis weekend that we've got that's coming up as well. And there's another one for building a business. So there's three really nice gifts there at chrishowardgift.com.
And, you know, hypnosis, we hear about a lot about hypnosis. What's the significance of hypnosis? Like, how can hypnosis help somebody transform?
Well, I mean, I think we have to first look at the fact that we're all hypnotized already. And that's important to understand. We're hypnotized to believe that we can have a certain quality of relationship. We're hypnotized to believe that we're, you know, that we're this good enough. We're not, we limit our own potential through what we've already accepted. And that's either through social hypnosis or the hypnosis that was there from the time our parents were teaching us, or from the school systems, the hypnosis that we have there. When you think of these saturation environments where you're soaking in beliefs and values and ways of looking at the world, that's all hypnosis, because, you know, it's a trance. It's one particular possibility in this quantum soup of pure potentiality. And when you start to, when you learn how to, and I don't even really, I think of it being more like neuro-hypnotic. It's hypnotic in nature, but it's transformation. And when you start working with the mind-body nervous system to reprogram and recondition, what you're actually doing is you're waking yourself up. It's not about becoming deep trance subjects. It's about waking up to your true possibility. It's about rehypnotizing you and stepping into a new possibility from that perspective.
Awesome. I love that. And also, I've been hearing sometimes some people have this, preconceived notion that, and I personally don't agree with it. I personally agree it's all about intention, but NLP, it's all about manipulation and being a sleazy salesperson or whatever, right? There is that conception out there. What do you say to that for people that have this association?
I think the only reason why they'd have that is because the sales, the NLP wasn't created or pulled together for salespeople. It was pulled together to create rapid therapy, and so when you've got a therapeutic interaction between a therapist and a client, there's a pre-existing ethical framework that surrounds that. The therapist, they're operating in the best interest of the client and looking to help to bring the best out of them. If you put it in the world of business, you see that there's oftentimes situational ethics, where it's like, what's ethical is what helps me win right here, right now. And you're going to get people like out there that will do that with anything. There's going to be people that will be manipulative without NLP or without any of these tools. And there'll be people that won't do that without any of these tools. And it's the same thing. So tools are ethicless. People have ethics for sure. That's the thing. But, I get why, because there was a bunch of people going into the business world. Like when it hit, it was probably in the 80s, right? It was probably right around when Tony Robbins brought it out. And he was using it, like a lot of you had people coming from the business world, salespeople coming in and things like that, that were learning it. And so now you've got individuals without ethical frameworks necessarily. And then I'm sure there were some fine people in business that were doing ethical things. But when we look at a movie like The Wolf of Wall Street, and we see the whole thing that happened with Jordan Belfort, or you look at the Bernie Madoffs of the world, could they have known hypnosis? Maybe, but they were going to screw up their business relationships anyway, regardless of what they had. So I don't really think of it that way. I will say, when I first came into it, one of the things that we teach is the concept of matching and mirroring to create rapport, right? Where you sit like somebody and you become like them. That's like going to France and having the common courtesy to attempt to speak the language a little bit, so they see that you're making an effort, right? So it's like you're sitting in and you're paying attention to them, and you're giving them eye contact and stuff like that. I did notice, so keep it real, when I went to my first master level training, I got there in the NLP when I was being trained in it, and I walked in and I thought, these people are really crappy at rapport, because like I was watching them, I'm like, they would create an incredible connection with you for a while, and then they turn and they'd walk away. And it, what we teach is the concept of matching and mirroring to create rapport, right? Where you sit like somebody and you become like them. That's like going to France and having the common courtesy to attempt to speak the language a little bit, so they see that you're making an effort, right? So it's like you're sitting in and you're paying attention to them, and you're giving them eye contact and stuff like that. I did notice, so keep it real, when I went to my first master level training, I got there in the NLP when I was being trained in it, and I walked in and I thought, these people are really crappy at rapport, because like I was watching them, I'm like, they would create an incredible connection with you for a while, and then they turn and they'd walk away, there was almost a spiritual arrogance about the way that they were. And I thought, well, that's weird, because I had When I was fresh out of high school, I went for worked for Club Med for 6 years. So worked in the hotel resort industry where we were super friendly. And, you know, you'd walk past somebody like, hey, going to tennis? All right. Fantastic. Enjoy the game. Right. And you talk to everybody. I thought of it as looking at the world through happy eyes. And it like for me, it was like I tried to do that back when I got back to Los Angeles after 6 years at Club Med. And people thought I was a weirdo. Right. Hey, all right. It looks like you went for a little golf. Right. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you had a good, you know, they weren't ready for that. So I was really good at rapport from that perspective. But then I also worked for Dale Carnegie Training, which is how to win friends and influence people. So I had a lot of rapport skills before going into NLP. And I remember thinking, these people are horrible at rapport because they'd used it in a mechanical way. That is one of the kind of things that you see happened in NLP a lot, is that you get people that were kind of wooden cardboard cutouts because there was a whole focus on modeling in NLP, which I think is a brilliant focus, but it does have some ramifications if it's done in not the right way. So for me, all of these tools, when they're used together, can be super powerful. Some of the best rapport stuff I got at Dale Carnegie Training. Some of the best rapport stuff I got at Club Med. So that's why I say I've kind of combined a lot of my thoughts and my ideas to produce a more powerful package of tools. From my perspective, and it really does make an impact. You know, I practice what I preach. I'm constantly joining things, learning things, putting myself in programs and stuff. I love it. I'm a seeker like yourself. We've been doing it for a while.
I love that. And I totally agree. I think, you know, in my personal past experience, and this was going back many, many years ago, I've been in sales as well. And I remember I was working for a company, it was a small company, and I was doing both marketing and sales. And there was another female that was also doing both as well. And we were selling real estate websites and also marketing as well. So I remember I can tell she learned something a little bit. I think she was incorporating some NLP, like the trickery stuff, like the whole, like she was trying the trickery stuff, right? She was just a bag of tricks. I was using NLP in a way where it was more with integrity. Like I wasn't trying to be a little trickster, meaning she was doing things she was like, you know, she was doing the whole classic, try to get them to fill out a form, and getting them in that mindset of like going through the steps. And she wasn't
About a sales process or something? Is that what we're discussing? Okay. All right. Got it.
Sales process.
Got it.
Yeah. So what happened was we would both close sales. But I was going about it in a way where I'm like, I'm building rapport, but I'm doing it in a genuine way. I'm actually listening to the prospect's pain. I'm asking them questions.
Here's the paradox. Both of you, both of those ways don't have to live independently of each other. They can live together. Where structurally you're doing it in a structural way, but you're coming from the place of a heartfelt way because you still have forms to fill out and stuff like that. Those things can coexist.
Yeah, but with her way, she would close the sale, but because she's doing it in a very, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, not as rich process. They would then afterwards cancel the sale. So she had tons of cancellations, right? So with me, I just made sure, I was doing the rapport. I was basically doing also a discovery process, and I was generally actually giving them information that would help their problems.
Well, you cared about the people that you were serving. I mean, that's, you know, this is, I was just talking to my mentoring group, and I said, you know, that most important thing we have to remember is what's the value we're creating? What are we creating for the world? Because money will always, those sales will always be a reflection of the value that we're creating. And I've had to remind myself of where the focus gets to be. The focus gets to be on building something you're proud of that can make an impact, that helps to change people's lives or helps to solve their problems. And if your focus is there, but you're paying attention to the bottom line, we have to pay attention to that. But in my experience, the real successful businesses are not the ones that are Where it's about the money, it's about something much, much bigger than the money. And so it's, you know, if somebody's plodding through just trying to make a sale, it would make sense that those sales fall out. If somebody's there trying, looking to serve, well, people don't like to be sold. People want to buy from people that they know that they're going to get the service or whatever it is that they're looking for. And so you've developed trust. That to me is rapport. So there are mechanics to rapport. You can go through the mechanical steps to create rapport. In fact, if you don't do the mechanics of rapport, you won't have the same connection. So those mechanics are important, but far more important than those mechanics is your heart space, where you're coming from, what it is that you're doing, what's your mission, what's your vision, what's all of that, because that's what people want to be a part of.
Yeah, I just think that she was missing that component of actually listening and asking questions and trying to match, you know, what was to solve their problems, actually, instead of just doing like, she just was just doing like these little gimmicky things without, yeah, providing that, solving the problem, going through that discovery process. Yeah, but you can definitely, I mean, I could have definitely incorporated what she was doing with what I was doing, and it still would have worked. It probably would have fortified closing the sale. But yeah, I agree. I totally agree. So what has been your biggest lesson for 2022?
My biggest lesson has been a personal lesson. Just, I went last week. I do a training every year in Hawaii called Billionaire Boot Camp, where we go and we model the billionaire psychology and we use hypnosis to install it in the participants and stuff. And, I've done that program on the big island of Hawaii with up to 500 people in it. I was doing a small private one. We just relaunched the company this year. We just started doing seminars in April. So as such, I had a few people that were enrolled in that, and still people not wanting to fly from Australia and stuff quite yet. They're a little gun shy from COVID and people that aren't vaccinated. They can't get in the country, all sorts of things. So I just did a small private one out there. But whenever I teach these programs, I'll go through the processes myself. And so I had profound transformation about my own life and about just patterns that I had. And that's a big wake up call. I think that another big, they're all values revelations, about what's really important. What's really important and what are we really here doing? And so it's not it's not about money. It's not about time. Although all of those are byproducts, more time, more of that, and less stress and less, worry are byproducts of get the right mindset. And so I've had some major shifts, and it's really personal. So it's still integrating.
Awesome. I love that. And for people who are in, so what is the training that you have out in Hawaii? What is that?
Well, that one's Billionaire Boot Camp. We just did that training, and it's really neat. There was a family that was there, and the youngest kid was 11 years old, but his intelligence, his IQ is off the chart. And so one of the things that we do is we install Warren Buffett's investment philosophy at the unconscious level. So by the end of the training, he was doing it backwards and forwards, this 11-year-old kid. I got it in a short video, so it's really cute. Because it's just super intelligent kid, but we've had people do that before, but he is the youngest that ever did that. So that was fun. We have all sorts of other trainings, that are certification courses where we teach everything I do. I teach people how to do. So it's coaching, consulting, educating. Our speakers training has been said to be the best in the world. We've got a lot of feedback giving us that feedback about it. So I love to teach. I love to empower. And the whole idea is to enrich humanity. If we could get people to upgrade their mindsets, we could change the whole world. So that's what the goal is.
Awesome. I love that. And you've been doing this for like so long. Like, oh my goodness. Like, was it over 20 years? Like,
oh yeah. I think I started in 96, I want to say. 96. Yeah. So it's probably been like 24 years, something like that.
Wow. That's amazing. So what keeps you going? Like, what keeps you doing? Like, it's the trainings, the speaking, jumping on stages. I mean, you spoke all over the world, you trained thousands of people. A lot of people attribute their success to you. So what keeps you going?
Keeps me going. you know, like I've had ups and downs, right? Like we all do. I think that, you know, to think that it's all ups with no downs is just buying the hype or whatever, or buying somebody's brand and stuff. Everybody has them. You know, that Elon Musk had the many nights sleeping at the office. You see people willing to go the extra distance for their baby. You see somebody like Richard Branson who got, you know, the Dirty Tricks campaign with British Airways trying to shut him down. And, you know, the people are pushed to extremes in business and life all the time. So when you look at that, you know, when you think of the ones that have created enormous success in worldly terms, how a lot of people might look at success, whether it be the amount of money that they make or, you know, the types of houses that they live in or any of those types of things, you know, what kept them going in those times where they fell down was just that they were on their true north. They were doing what they were born to do. You look at a Martin Luther King Jr. Well, how could you keep going? And he knew that he wasn't going to live a long life. He knew it. He knew that somebody was, you know, that something was going to happen. And he even said, I may not see the other side of this tunnel with you. He said, when we step out to the daybreak of brotherhood, he says, but I've seen it already. He knew that he had such opposition. So, you know, it was Einstein famously that said that, you know, and I'll paraphrase, that, you know, creative spirits will always have violent opposition from mediocre minds. And it's true that when we take a stand, when we start to, we're gonna have opposition that comes in. We step up, there will be opposition. And so we get to get clear from my perspective about, you know, how are we going to deal with those things in advance? And part of it, you know, is making sure that we love the path so much that those things can't dissuade us. And part of it for me is faith, which I think is more important than anything, because if I don't have my faith, I don't know how. And I think that that's super important for a lot of people. We don't have faith that things will work out, that all things lead to God's greater good, that, you know, it might be the universe that we think about, or, you know, a man or a woman sitting on a cloud. I don't know. I don't think of it that way. I think of it just as energy. And like Rumi said, that we're the entire ocean in a drop. I think of it that way. And when we have faith in the entire ocean, that means that our life will be more profound, and we'll make decisions from that space. And we'll, you know, that will color the lenses that we look everything with. And as Einstein said, one of the most important distinctions we'll ever make for ourselves is whether we believe that the universe is a friendly place or a hostile place. Because if we see it as a hostile place, we will attract all sorts of garbage. But when we see it as being a friendly place, we get in flow with the universe, we get in rapport with the universe, because it's not just one person we could be in rapport with, but we could be in or out of rapport with the universe. And that one leads to heaven or hell right here on earth between our own ears. You know, they both, you know, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is why I have this podcast, is like to get people to kind of wake up more and more to that truth. So any closing words before we wrap up, Chris? I know you're always having these. Where can people go to learn more about you and to enroll into your ongoing trainings?
Yeah, go to chrishowardgift.com, chrishowardgift.com. And because we've got some great gifts on there, and that's always the best way to do it. You get to get a taste of who we are, and then when you want to do more, do more.
And the link will be in the show notes, guys. I highly, highly encourage you to click on chrishowardgift.com, enroll, sign up, take advantage of Chris Howard's, they're online, right? Online trainings?
Everything's on there. So you got, yep.
Okay. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for being on the podcast.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Learned some new gems today, and I'm sure my audience did. And everybody else, remember to live happy, being well. And if this is your first time listening, subscribe so you don't miss another upcoming episode. All right, until next time, guys.
If you learned something new or were inspired to live happy, being well, please be sure to subscribe to the Happy Being Well podcast so you don't miss an upcoming episode. Also, please feel free to leave a 5-star review, including what you learned or what inspired you in today's episode. This podcast is presented by HappyBeingWell.com. your online store for natural wellness products so you can live happy being well. Order your next all-natural essential oil, all-natural face mask, all-natural bath soap, all-natural deodorant, herbal tea, crystals including crystal home decor and kitchen items, irresistible leggings, and much more at happybeingwell.com. Free shipping on all orders within the USA.